Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, January 26th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Governor Dayton is set to release his transportation plan. A researcher doubts cutting taxes on Social Security would give retirees an incentive to stay here. And an analysis of cases where police killed people in Minnesota. DFL Governor Mark Dayton is set to release details today of a transportation funding plan that he's been talking about for weeks. Tim Pugmire reports.
Dayton has already made clear his goal to raise $6 billion over the next 10 years to fund road, bridge, and transit projects. He's proposing a 6.5% wholesale tax on gasoline, increased license fees, and a half-cent metro sales tax increase. Dayton said the price tag is not cheap, but the state needs to catch up after decades of insufficient investment.
It's going to be a tough sell, but I think people recognize that doing just what we're doing now means 10, 20 years now, our transportation problems are going to just be that much more severe.
Dayton's approach runs counter to House Republicans who are proposing to spend $750 million over 4 years, relying on the budget surplus and money already in MnDOT's budget. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Twin Cities-based Medtronic is expected to officially become an Irish company today. The Irish High Court approved the deal this morning. Mark Zadeklik has more.
Medtronic is buying Ireland-based medical products maker Covidien. Approval from the High Court of Ireland this morning sets the stage for Medtronic to close the deal after U.S. stock markets closed this afternoon. The purchase will make Medtronic an Irish company for tax purposes, allowing it to return foreign earnings to U.S. operations without taking a big tax hit. Medtronic says the move will strengthen its U.S. operations. Industry analyst Jeff Windau of Edward Jones concurs.
They'll be able to spend more, and they won't necessarily have some of the tax consequences of trying to bring money back or repatriate money back into the U.S.
Medtronic says its operational headquarters and CEO will remain in Minnesota. Mark Zadeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Republicans in the Minnesota Senate said last week they want to phase out the state's income tax on Social Security benefits. The tax cut would reduce state revenue by hundreds of millions of dollars over the next few years. But the bill's authors say Minnesota is losing retirees to warmer and neighboring states with lower taxes. They say Minnesota needs to keep its retirees, and the loss in tax revenue would be offset by taxes collected on goods and services. Karen Conway is a professor of economics at the University of New Hampshire. She studied what's called senior migration and says the tax break probably wouldn't make much of a difference about whether retirees stay or go.
Well, my co-author John Rourke and I have done several studies on this topic, and we just can find no evidence that these tax breaks have a meaningful effect on elderly migration. Something that people need to remember is that people move to Florida, Texas, because of the weather and amenities, as well as perhaps the low cost of living and the tax system. And so what John and I have done is we've looked at, over time, whether people seem to respond to changes in these tax policies. These tax policies have changed a lot, including a number of states in the Midwest. And we just don't see any, again, meaningful reaction to these tax breaks. We don't see a big uptick in migration. Instead, migration is very steady over time, in spite of these changing taxes. This is not to say that nobody will move. There are some studies that show perhaps very modest effects, but nothing I've seen suggests that these tax breaks pay for themselves, for instance.
University of New Hampshire economics professor Karen Conway. She says generally not many retirees move from the state where they worked. Since the beginning of the year, two Twin Cities men in their 20s are dead after encounters with the police. St. Paul police shot and killed an African-American man, Marcus Golden, nearly 2 weeks ago. And just 3 days later, a white man, Quincy Rendell, died of multiple gunshot wounds after an encounter with Bloomington police. An analysis of 60 fatal law enforcement shootings across the state found that in most cases, officers killed people who were armed with weapons. Brant Williams has the story.
NPR News examined data from the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, information from police departments across the state, and court documents. In the vast majority of 60 fatal incidents since 2008, police shot people holding guns or knives. And in nearly 30% of shootings, police reported being shot at. Nate Gove is the executive director of the Minnesota Peace Officer Standards and Training, or POST Board. He says while every situation is different, the person with the gun or knife can usually avoid harm by complying with the officer's orders.
I'm familiar with very few incidents where the suspect wasn't given ample opportunity to comply and be taken into custody without any more difficulty.
Yet complying with an officer's commands doesn't guarantee that the officer will refrain from using excessive force, according to Minneapolis attorney Steve Smith. Smith has represented clients who have filed lawsuits alleging police brutality, including cases where people claim officers used excessive force on them after they gave themselves up.
It's a very simplistic thing to say, you know, all you have to do is follow directions and nothing happens. It simply doesn't work that way.
Post Board Director Gove, a former police officer with nearly 30 years' experience, says most officers will never kill a suspect during their careers, but they face potentially life-threatening situations. More than a quarter of fatal shootings since 2008 occurred when officers responded to domestic disturbances, and a smaller number of incidents arose from traffic stops. Gove notes that Mendota Heights Officer Scott Patrick was killed last year as he approached a vehicle he'd pulled over. Patrick was one of six law enforcement officers killed while on duty since 2008. NPR News examined state death records to determine the race and gender of people shot and killed by law enforcement officers during that time frame. 95% of people killed were men. Whites made up 60%. African Americans, 27%. Yet they make up less than 6% of Minnesota's population. Civil liberties advocates say they can't explain why encounters between law enforcement officers and people of color turn deadly, but studies do show that minorities come into contact with law enforcement more often than whites. Chuck Samuelson, executive director of the Minnesota chapter of the ACLU, points to a recent study of Minneapolis police data.
I think you see in the numbers that the ACLU put out, you see in terms of low-level drug arrests, you get a lot more African-American males searched for marijuana possession and then ticketed for marijuana possession than whites.
John Raisler is an epidemiologist with the Minnesota Department of Health who studies rates of death and disease among Minnesotans. He says the relatively small number of people shot to death by law enforcement officers makes it hard to draw solid conclusions. However, Raisler says the data collected by NPR News may be representative of another racial gap.
The disparities are may not be surprising given the overrepresentation of African Americans in the gun deaths that are occurring in Minnesota and nationwide.
According to CDC data, African Americans in Minnesota in their upper teens and early 20s are nearly 20 times more likely to be killed by guns than whites in the same age group. The median age of African Americans killed by law enforcement in Minnesota since 2008 is 24. For whites, it's 36. Raisler says it's also important to know if people shot by law enforcement officers were intoxicated or experiencing mental health crises. Drugs, alcohol, or mental illness were reported in at least a dozen of the fatal shootings examined. So far, no criminal charges have been filed against any of the more than 100 officers who fired their guns during these incidents. One of those incidents was the fatal shooting nearly 3 years ago of Delshawn Crawford by two Minneapolis police officers who were not charged with crimes after a grand jury inquiry. Police say Crawford threatened the officers with a knife. However, the attorney for Crawford's family, Ashwin Medea, says Crawford's girlfriend saw the shooting and said Crawford wasn't holding a weapon.
While he had one in his hand earlier in the night, he had put it down and it had been on a table for the past 15 minutes by the time the officers came and opened fire.
Crawford's family is suing the officers in federal court for wrongful death. The case is scheduled to go to trial this fall. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.